show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, it's the All-Star break, and we have our mid-season review. And I don't know about you, Mike, but the Royals are making me want to do a mid-life review right now with how they've been playing. Thankfully, with the All-Star break, we were spared the extra games. But we will dive right into that in a second. But first, I, of course, am Jeff Hur, and with me is the man who's always an All-Star but never needs a break. Michael, how are you doing on this? It's very – actually somewhat of a respite of an evening.
Yeah.
Being below 90 degrees.
Yeah, it was like 93 for the high today, but like about lunchtime it was in the 80s. Like, that's cool.
I know, right?
I'll take more of that, please. Where do I sign up? How do we get this, you know, all summer long? But, you know, that's not how it works. You can't just ask for it.
This too shall pass. Yep. And tomorrow, I think, we'll be back on pace.
Great. Great. That's perfect. Wonderful. Great.
So, fantastic.
Yeah.
Right?
That's
so before we dive in to the over-unders, a couple of things. First, the big news, baseball, that just broke. Manny Machado was traded from the Baltimore Orioles to the Los Angeles Dodgers for five prospects. One of which including, is it Yusniel Diaz? I'm not sure how you pronounce his first name.
I think that's it.
Yusniel Diaz, who's a very highly touted prospect. And then I can't remember the names of all the others, Mike. I think you said you had those written down.
I wrote down Diaz because he's the notable guy. He was the Dodgers' number three prospect. He was like number 31 in BP's top 50. And he's really the prize of it. The other guys are, you know, not to disparage them, but they're kind of guys, they're depth guys. They maybe have some upside, but it's definitely centered around Diaz, who I think he homered twice in the Futures game, which is, you know, hey,
sounds right.
That's pretty good. That's not bad. So
I'll take that.
Yeah. You know, the big move for the Orioles who, you know, they get some talent, you know, usually when these deals kind of pop up, somebody definitely is jumping out to be like, oh, they totally blew it and everything. But it's like, for where the Orioles are, they got a pretty good return for Machado, and the Dodgers got, the top 10 position player, basically. So not too shabby. Both sides kind of went out in this one. And the Orioles are going to be worse now. So they're already a game behind the Royals, I think, in the All-Star break. So that race for that number one pick is on.
Yeah, a behind or ahead, depending on how you're looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, they both
ahead in the standings, but behind in the vying for that number one pick, as you mentioned. So that's what would probably be why it's most relevant to the Royals. But you know, for the Dodgers, you know, the last 3 years, the team that has won the World Series made a big time splash at the trade deadline. Of course, the Royals in 2015 with the Cueto Zobrist deals, the Cubs in 2016 with the Aroldis Chapman deal, and in 2017, last year, the Astros trading for Justin Verlander. All four players mentioned played very, very large roles in those teams winning the World Series. so, you know, the Dodgers are hoping that that trend continues. So we will see if that is in fact the case. Who knows, but Manny Machado is no longer in the American League. Whether we'll be back next year, who knows. But as of now, that's the case. So That's about all there is to say about that for the moment. As for the Royals, you know, no more huge trades have really occurred. Of course, there are whispers now of not whispers. There's lots of rumors about Mike Moustakas, but there are some whispers about Whit Merrifield as well, possibly him being traded. You know, both those are probably the two most prominent trade chips that the Royals have as of the moment. You know, there's a talk of the Yankees possibly being interested in Mike Moustakas, and I would like to see how he plays in that park. But
yeah, be interesting.
But, you know, nobody's really had. You know, those are kind of the rumors that it hasn't been one of those things like, you know, the last couple days as we've been leading towards the Manny Machado trade, there was a lot of smoke around the fire between the Dodgers and the Orioles, but you don't see that same level, and you obviously wouldn't expect someone like Mike Moustakas or Whit Merrifield to get that same kind of a treatment. But at the same time, you know, you can usually tell how interested a team is, and it feels like, you know, there are some teams that are interested in Moose, but none, you know, that are just itching to go out and make sure that he's there as soon as possible. So I don't know. I mean, what you feel like? I definitely think they're going to make a deal for Moose. You think Whit's going to be traded to, or you think he's going to remain?
I think Moose is. We're officially on Moose Hug Watch right now.
Moose Hug Watch.
He's
my favorite.
The deadline's in less than 2 weeks. It's to the Royals' benefit if they can get him moved in the next 2 weeks, because before the waiver deadline comes up, you know, as we kind of go over every year, you know, I think it's 2:00 Central Time on July 31st is when the actual, like, the first deadline comes up, and at that point you can trade to whoever you want. You know, whatever, doesn't matter. Say, hey, we want to trade you Mike Moustakas, and any team can really answer that. And after that, he's got to clear waivers first, and, you know, any team can claim him, and then that's the only team that the Royals can trade with, or unless he can go all the way through waivers. So there's probably going to be some teams blocking people, so it's to the Royals' benefit to be able to go to any team right now and trade him. You know, we talked a bit last week, or maybe the week before, you know, a month ago, I don't know, about how he could be an attractive trade chip. And, you know, he's got experience, he's got power, he's good defensively, you know, all of those kind of things really kind of fit. Plus, he's going to be pretty cheap. I mean, he's going to be maybe $3 million, even if a team picks up the entirety of his remaining salary. So that's not too bad at all, really. You know, what the Royals get in return, I don't know, but if they can get him traded in the next 2 weeks, that really kind of maximizes what they could get. The Yankees are interested. The Braves are said to be interested. The Phillies are said to be interested in, like, everybody. The Brewers have been kind of linked, but they've been more linked to Whit Merrifield. I saw something from, I think, Ken Rosenthal just before we started recording that they might look at Brian Dozier of Minnesota. So, you know, I don't think they'll trade Whit Merrifield, but he's definitely someone that there seems to be some interest in getting him. So, I mean, if the right deal came along, I think the Royals would possibly do it. They're not under the same kind of, you know, time pressure that they are with Moustakas, where, you know, if they don't trade him this month, yeah, they could trade him in August and maybe get something, but past that, you know, they don't really have much to get back from him. You know, they kind of run into a spot where if he's on the team the rest of the season, they don't really get anything for him other than, you know, having Moustakas on the team the rest of the season. You know, they do have an option, but it's like $15 million, I think, next year. And, you know,
it's a mutual option. I can't even think off the top of my head the last time a mutual option was actually exercised.
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't seem to fit for either the Royals or Moustakas to, you know, to end up with him on this team on August 1st. So, So I mean, that's he's going to be gone. I mean, that's foregone conclusion unless he gets hurt, which sure that could happen. But he's gone for sure. I don't think they'll trade Whit Merrifield. I didn't think they would trade Whit Merrifield any time he's come up as a trade candidate. I just, you know, I feel like they think that they are close enough that by the time Whit Merrifield starts to be approaching, you know, the end of his service time, he'll still be on a team that is now starting to make that rise. And I think they would want him to be around for that. So, you know, I think that they feel like they've got 2 years and then people start coming up and Whit Merrifield would still be a part of that. So maybe they're right. I hesitate to agree with them on that idea, but, you know, I think that's kind of where they're at. And they're also at a point where, like, you know, he's not even at his arbitration level yet. So it's like they're not under any pressure of moving him. The only thing that might work is that he's probably at his peak value right now. He had, what, 19 homers last year, led the league in stolen bases, hitting 300 now. The power is down, but the walks are up, and he's still stealing bases. He's got 30 doubles. I mean, he's having a good season. He's able to play anywhere. He could be potentially a very valuable player, and he's still on the right side of 30 for now. I could see that being something that teams would hold over the Royals later as a reason why they wouldn't want to give up a lot of promising prospects because, you know, while Merrifield hasn't been in the league that long, he didn't break into the league until, you know, he was much older than a lot of players. So I think if the Royals are going to deal him, it's like, you know, the next month and a half or this winter. And then after that, I don't know that they would get the return that they would hope or want to get. It gets kind of tricky. So I don't think they're going to do it. But if the right deal comes along, I also don't think they're going to hesitate to pull the trigger. Like if they get what they want, I think they'll go for it. I mean, they've shown that if when they get the deal they like, you know, they traded John Jay and Kelvin Herrera in June, you know. They didn't want to wait. They just went for it, and they got the guys they wanted. So if it comes up, I don't think they'll hesitate to do it. I just don't think that they're going to get the offer they expect.
Yeah, you know, as unscientific as this is to say, Whit Merrifield is just far too much of a Royals-type player for them to trade. You know, it seems like a guy that the Royals love to hang on to, sometimes too long. But it's, you know, I'm inclined to agree with you that it's just, I don't think they'll trade him. You know, the off season could be a little bit different depending on the package they get, depending on the season. You know, if he has another 15 to 20 home runs and who knows, you know, where he finishes with stolen bases and doubles, et cetera, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, if he can pull off another season, then he's going to garner quite a bit more interest in the offseason than he is probably now at the trade deadline. So I agree. If he makes it past the offseason, then he's probably going to be a Royal for a while. So who knows how long, but I do agree with that. So, but yeah, I think Moose is gone. It's just in a when and how much type of situation. Hopefully, you know, it'll be a good return. I'm so torn on what I should be or what I am expecting for Moose, because he has that, you know, hometown guy flavor that we all like, and so we probably value him a little bit higher than where he should where he should actually be valued. And you know, you saw that a lot with Alex Gordon, and you saw it with Eric Hosmer too, and those players were both better than Moose, so there's that to consider. And we've talked about it before, you know, the idea that Moose is a very good player to have on your team. He's the guy that every team would love to have and want on their team, but he's not that guy that puts you over the edge. So, you know, if you're the Los Angeles Dodgers and you go get Manny Machado, who's one of the best baseball players on the planet right now, then your team immediately becomes way better, you know, multiple wins better. You know, Manny Machado will by himself win multiple games through the rest of the year. You know, not necessarily a ton, but, you know, there's going to be four or five games throughout the remainder of the year that Manny Machado is going to do something that is going to propel the Dodgers to a victory that would not have been there if he hadn't been there. Mike Moustakas isn't that guy that you know, not to say that he wouldn't do anything that would you know, propel you to victory, because he has for the Royals plenty of times, but he's not the guy that you have that fear about. He's not the, if you're the opposing team, he's not the guy that you constantly think, okay, we just need to get him to the plate because he can make something happen. So with that being the reality, the odds of the Royals fetching a really attractive prospect haul is pretty slim, but you know, hopefully they can get somebody good that they can, you know, keep adding pieces to this next wave that they're, you know, 3 or 4 years away from, that hopefully they can, you know, get these guys all up at the same time and kind of recreate that magic that started in 2011 with, you know, Moose, one of the guys that started that. So hopefully they can kind of repeat that process, but we will certainly see.
Yeah. I can't really think that he's going to get a lot. I mean, we've talked numerous times about what these, you know, quote rental type players return. And, you know, right now you're getting two plus months of Mike Moustakas. And, you know, it's tough to trade a guy that really fits into your long-term plans. If they're like a prospect, not that you can't trade away talent if you're the acquiring team, but like, it does leave you kind of wondering, okay, well, do we really have to give up this much? And, you know, most teams really don't. You know, they just don't have to worry about that. So, you know, the big-time guys, the top 100 overall prospect-type guys are going off to teams. Most of the time over the last few years, they're going to, you know, in return for guys who have some team control past the current season. And Moustakas doesn't have that. And he's not like a top tier player. He's he's a very legitimate big leaguer, but it's like, you know, like you were saying, comparing him and Machado, it's like, well, he's not the type of difference maker that, you know, you really have to go out and get. He's a very good complement to an already stacked lineup. And, you know, that's kind of what I think teams are going to be looking for. And that doesn't mean he can't return something. I think, you know, he's definitely going to be able to get them someone who probably gets up to the majors at some point. But it's such a weird market sometimes that it's hard to predict. And I'm really bad at predicting those things. I just don't, you know, there's so many prospects out there that I don't think I've ever guessed right on who a prospect coming back might be. So I'm, you know, I don't even worry about it. But I do. I think it is good that the Dodgers got Machado. This has been brought up. Dave Lesky, I think, mentioned it first on Twitter at some point yesterday or today. The Dodgers weren't ever really in on Moose, and so their acquiring Machado, A, doesn't take a team that would be interested in Moustakas off the board, and B, it takes away a, you know, third base, left side of the infield type of guy away from the other teams who are looking. And so teams like Philadelphia, like maybe New York, maybe Atlanta, if they were thinking about Machado, well, now he's not available to them. So maybe that gives the Royals a little more leverage to maybe get a little better prospect. So we'll see. I mean, by this time next week, we might be talking about, you know, the return on Mike Moustakas. And I would think most certainly 2 weeks from now, we'll be covering whatever the Royals got for him. I think they're going to be pretty aggressive with it. So, you know, interesting to see. I think we all kind of made our peace on saying goodbye last year in September and October. So it's not as like bittersweet as it maybe could have been. It's kind of like, cool, he gets to go play for a playoff contender again. That'll be all right. And maybe the Royals can get something. And also, season's been so miserable that it's like, cool, something good happened to one of these guys.
Right.
It's like, God, good luck to them.
So hopefully in the next week or so, we'll have that trade to go over and talk about. In the meantime, the Royals remain on the All-Star break for the next couple of days. So the Royals can they will spare you and the rest of us losses that we'll, that we'll have to go over as they ended the first first half of the season, or I should say the I always hate calling it the first half. As an accountant and an auditor, I hate calling it the first half when it is than the first half.
It is not a half.
In terms of games. But for lack of a better term, the first half, they ended with a whimper and not even close to a bang. The Royals are 27-68 as they sit at the All-Star break. So,
that's so bad.
We'll get to that in a second. But we'll start with the over-under. So as you know, if you listen to this show, which if you're listening now, hopefully you listened before. If not, welcome. But before the season, every year, Mike and I have our over-under pancake jamboree where we discuss the different, usually based on, you know, Pecota and projections, things like that, where certain players have this batting average, this many home runs, this is what the projections are for what they are, and we kind of take those and maybe we make up a few ourselves or we modify some, whatever, and we use those as an over under and we both choose what we think the player will be over or under, or sometimes team statistics, but and then we make a few bold predictions. So we're going to go over those and kind of see how we're doing. Obviously the season is not over yet, but we're more than halfway there, so we'll have a good idea about what the pace is and how close we are, and whether, you know, Mike or I, whoever else was over or under, whether or not we're close to being right. So first we'll start off with the man we were just talking about, Mike Moustakas. He had 38 home runs last year, so we thought let's do that again. Let's see what do we think over under for Moose on whether or not he would do that again. And for me, I picked the over.
You're
it
hoping for that 40, yeah.
As I wanted the 40, I wanted it so bad last year. He got hobbled. He limped literally to the finish line last year, but he still got the record. So at least that was cool. But I was hoping for 40 this year. So I said over, and Mike, you said you said under, though you were a little hesitant.
Yeah. I remember when we first said it, I was really dead set. I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure he's going to be under. And then I started looking at things, and like we recorded that episode back at the end of March. And so, you know, he had a good road home run record in 2017. He was on a good pace in 2016 at the start of the year before he got hurt. And so, you know, he really was on a good pace last year until he got beaned by Bruce Rondon, and then his knee kind of gave him some issues. And so that kind of like made me think twice about it, because while he just barely got to that 38, you know, the underlying kind of numbers were a lot better, but I still went with under. So, but I definitely, I almost talked myself into going over, but yeah, did end up at the under. Back in March.
And right now, you're looking much smarter than me, even despite my wishful thinking. I would say much smarter, but you're looking smarter. as of now, the All-Star break, Mike Moustakas is at 19 home runs. So, you know, again, we're past the actual halfway point in games, but as a kind of demarcation of the halfway through the season, Moose is kind of right on pace to where he was last year. Of course, you know, if you use the All-Star game as a true split, but on a per game average for how it would play out over a season, of course, he's a little bit behind. So, but he's close enough to where, you know, he's got, so we've got 67 games left in the season. Moose is perfectly capable of getting hot and hitting 21 home runs in that span. You know, he's had stretches like that before.
It'd be about one every three games or so would get him to 40, and that's probably
he was really
12
hot
at bats per, you know.
Yeah, when he was really hot last year, and we were on the show talking about, oh, he's going to blow past 36, he's going to blow past 40 even. We thought, you know, 45 might be around where he ended up. That was the kind of stretch that he was on. He was just seemed like every night he was hitting, he would have multiple homer games, etc. So, you know, he is certainly capable of doing it. I don't know that he will, because obviously there's two things in play here. One, just is he going to, Two, of course, will he even be a Royal as he does? And both of us, as we just mentioned, do not think that he will be. So, you know, let's say the Yankees trade for him. It's even more possible that hits 21 home runs, especially in that park. So that would be the ultimate, the very final gut punch to me.
He gets 40 homers, but he's a Yankee when he does it.
But he's not a Royal. And not only that, he's a Yankee.
You're right.
So that would that'd be rough.
Yeah.
But who knows? I would give myself half credit for that, though, on the over-under. But right now, for that first one, it's looking like you're closer to taking this one than I am.
Yeah, I think right now, like, if you just look at it, I think he's hitting a homer every 18 at-bats right now, which puts him at, like, a 34-some home run pace with, you know, just under 70 games left. That's still very good. And you know, like you said, if he gets hot, yeah, he might even get there. And if he does get traded to the Yankees, that helps him even more because that's a good park for him. But, you know, one, I don't remember if we ever put a caveat on, you know, or any kind of like condition on him being a Royal when he did this. He's definitely not going to do it while a Royal. I'm 99% sure. But he might do it if he's traded to the right team. So I would still say under, just because I don't know what team he's going to end up traded to. And there's still kind of a need for a hot streak that can't really guarantee. So I'm going to stay with under. But, you know, I would not be surprised if he got traded to Philadelphia or New York to see him go on some run where he hits like 10 homers in 2 weeks and is like right back at that 40-homer pace. And probably if he does it as a Yankee, a lot of people will feel very sick to their stomachs in Kansas City because we don't like the Yankees. So
No, we don't.
Yeah.
But who knows? Good luck to him. Hopefully, I hope that he does hit 40 because, you know, another thing that is if he does get traded to somewhere like the Yankees and he's in that park and he does get hot, and hit that 40 home runs, which, as you just said, you're correct. He's much more likely to do so in a park like that. If that happens, then it's even better for him, you know, because it kind of, I don't know if I want to say the word inflates because that implies that he didn't actually do it, but he did, you know. But, you know, it pumps those stats up a little bit more to where people are going to say, okay, well, he had 38 home runs in a harder ballpark, and then he only spent less than half a season in a better, more hitter-friendly ballpark, and then went past, you know, got up to 40. So his power is legit. He can make it work anywhere. Let's get him a big deal. So just on a strictly moose scale perspective, if he can go to a hitter-friendly park, which I'm sure he's hoping for, you know, and I'm sure Boris is gunning for as an agent. You know, if that is the case, even though I don't know how much say agents have in trades, but it's that would be kind of an added benefit for Moose. That would be really cool because, you know, I even if he's no longer a Royal, which like we said, we don't think he will be, I still, you know, just like I was happy for Hosmer when he got the deal, I was happy for Kane when he got the deal that he got. You know, I hope that Moose gets a good deal because, you know, he's a good player. He's earned it. He's a lot of good time, done a lot of good things for the Royals. So, you know, good luck to him.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I guess that'll move us on to the next one. You want to take this one?
Yeah. First, just for housekeeping purposes, are you officially an under for Moustakas?
Here, for the update.
Here at the break?
Yes.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. Yes. I will go under. Yes.
Cool. Just doing the books here. Keeping an accurate record.
As the accountant, I am very I'm glad to hear you say that.
The next one that we've got on the list, one of the narratives.
What are you still under then?
Oh yeah, I'm still under.
Still
under. I think he'll still be under. I think he'll, you know, he'll definitely be over like 25, but I don't think he'll get over that 38.
Oh yeah, now I see where you're putting it. Okay, I got you. We've got the shared spreadsheet showed up where we have all these combined, so I was looking at the wrong place, but now I see it, so we're good.
Yeah, moving on. One of the narratives was that Ned Yost wanted to get 500 at bats for a couple of players, One of those players was Jorge Soler, who back in March, we weren't sure what he was going to do. As it turned out, first couple months of the season, he was actually almost literally on fire. Like, he was hitting like crazy. Good power, getting on base, a lot of really good games. And then he got hurt. A break in his foot, a broken bone in his foot, has put him on the DL. So back in March, we both felt that Soler was going to have the chance to get to that 500 at bat mark. And we were both over. I think we were both in agreement that they were going to do everything they could to get him in the lineup as long as he was hitting. And he was definitely hitting. At the All-Star break, at the time of his injury, he had 223 at-bats. So right now, he's under that pace. And so for me, I'll go ahead and I'll just deem that I think he's definitely going to fall under that. I haven't even heard like an update on how he's doing. But before he comes back at all, he's been out, you know, a month, 5 weeks, something like that. He's going to have to stop by Omaha, do a rehab assignment. That's going to take some time away. The Royals only have 67 games left. Even if he came back on Friday, he'd still need over 4 at-bats per game and to play every game to get over 500. So I think just mathematically, he can't do it. I don't see how he can do it. But I do think that once he's healthy, they're going to play him as much as they can because they want to see if he can continue hitting. And also, it'd be really cool to see the lineup with Jorge Bonifacio and Jorge Soler at the same time, which wasn't able to happen in the first half because Bonifacio was under suspension. So I think we're both going to miss this, but if you feel differently, I will open the floor to you to make a counter argument if you feel like he'll go over.
I do not. I feel the same as you do, especially in terms of that the Royals will, in fact, give him as many opportunities as possible once he has returned and healthy. But like you said, I mean, just the math is too much to overcome here. Even if, I mean, over 4 at-bats a game for 67 consecutive games, I mean, that's especially with the way the Royals offense has been operating, where, you know, multiple trips through the order is a rarity.
Right. They have to hit him leadoff, basically.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
Even so then, it's very iffy.
Yeah. So I don't know if anyone will get. He needs 277 at bats the rest of the way.
Yeah.
So, and that would just be a push. That'd be 500. So he would need 278 to go get the over, which we both had.
Even more difficult. And,
yes.
He'd probably walk on one of those too. And then it's like, well, that's not an at bat.
That's right. That would he'd actually get the 277, and then he would walk, and it would just be a push, and that would be that for us.
Very disappointing.
But very disappointing it would most certainly be. But yeah, I think it's too much. The math is too much. And like you said, we don't even know if when he's going to be healthy again. So that's almost certainly an under. But all the same, you know, two things that. The first half of the season, besides the Royals' record, one of the most disappointing things was Soler's injury because, as you mentioned, you know, he at times he looked like he was setting the world on fire in baseball terms.
Probably would have been the All-Star if he was still healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was, you know, looking like, hey, this is the guy that we can live with as the return from the Wade Davis trade for the next 3 years. You know, he was that's what he was looking like. So it was really disappointing to see him get injured and have to stop that. But, you know, the flip side of that coin is that as he comes back healthy at some point this season, and the Royals will definitely put him in there to see if he can continue to show what he showed the first half of the season. I'm excited to see if he can. Because he was, and we talked about it before the season, he was one of the more exciting pieces of it. He was one of the more exciting ideas because there was no one that was still, he's one of those guys that always had that talent that he was just.
Hadn't tapped into it yet.
Yeah, and entirely. Nobody would ever fully count him out. You know, it was almost like, I don't know if I really want to make this comparison, but I'm going to. so like someone like Kyle Davies, right? Like
Okay.
He was terrible in every sense of the word.
Sure.
But, you know, people always talked about his stuff, and they were like, his stuff's really good, but it just doesn't translate. Like, what's happening? And so people kept giving him chances because, you know, his stuff just, when you know, take it out of the context of the game, you know.
and you avoid the results.
It looked really good. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and I feel like Jorge Soler, regardless of what his career would have ended up, will ever end up being, he would be that same type of guy. Like, man, he's got that skill set there, stuff that you can't teach, stuff that you can't learn. You know, he's got that, and he's got that power. It just hasn't been tapped yet. And you know, some team along the line would say, okay, maybe we're the team that's going to unlock this, and we're going to do it, and we're going to help him through, et cetera. So, you know, that was kind of my point, is that he's – with that level of talent, he's always going to be someone that that people think going into a season, okay, well, he could do something this year. He could make it happen this year. Whereas, you know, some players you think, okay, you know, Chester Cuthbert, much as I love Chester Cuthbert, you know, we've seen the best from him. You know, we're pretty confident in that. He's not going to go out and do much more than he's done before for the Royals. So, you know, there are differences there. So I'm excited. I'm excited to see when he gets back and healthy, what he can do, if he can keep that going. And, you know, it was, you know, hopefully it's just kind of one of those freak injuries and it's not him being injury prone, et cetera, but we'll see on that front. But I'm definitely hoping that he gets back soon, even if he won't make it to those 500 at-bats. He gets quite a few more. We can see, you know, how for real that first part of the season was.
Yep. Hopefully that'll be soon, but I don't know. Haven't heard much. I mean, there just hadn't been much reporting on it.
Nope.
You know,
I think people would be more concerned if they, you know, was something that they were playing for. Oh, we need this guy back. But,
yeah,
you know, when 27-68, he gets back when he gets back. Let him heal. Let him get back and be fully healthy. No need to rush this process. Speaking of the process, one of the main pieces of the original process, Alcides Escobar, he was our next over-under. We had the amount of games Alcides Escobar would be hitting at leadoff, and we set the over-under at 125. And I snarkily suggested the over, hashtag Yosted, because assuming that Yost would just find some excuse to make that happen, to put him in we just seemed to, you know, in the 2015 playoff run, which I don't blame them because it was actually true. But, you know, we just play better with Esky at leadoff. Like, okay, I guess, you know, I mean, you weren't going to argue with it at the time.
No.
Because it actually was happening. They were playing really well. So, you know, just, hey, go with it until, you know, keep going until it doesn't work for you anymore. But even when it didn't work, sometimes they continued to force it in other seasons. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that same thing would happen here, especially with Ned Yost and the affinity that he has for players like Escobar. But I've been incredibly wrong. So far, zero games for Alcides Escobar. And with the...
He's hit second before, but not leadoff.
Yes. And with the termination of his streak of consecutive games played, the odds of him getting any games this season, you know, and then the change in his role, the odds of him getting any games this season at leadoff is going to be slim to none. And even if he led off every game for the rest of the season, just like Jorge Soler, this one isn't even a probably won't do it. This is an absolutely impossible.
Literally cannot do it.
He cannot have 125 games considering they only have 67 games left. So we can call this one. So my prediction of over for that was horribly wrong.
Yeah, it was a little off. It was a little bit off.
Maybe the worst since my first bold Kyle Zimmer prediction. I can't remember exactly what it was.
But I think it was only something like 20 innings in the majors or 25.
Yeah, I was
going to
say 25. That's what I was thinking. So maybe the worst.
Didn't happen.
Because he didn't even pitch 25 in the minors that year. So I don't. Maybe the worst I've been off since then.
I get the idea, though, because, I mean, they signed Escobar, and it's like, why would any team re-sign Escobar anyway? And then, you know, Yost's tendencies and, well, you know, absent anybody else who would step up. I mean, Whit Merrifield, you know, played very well. He's the leadoff hitter now, and he's doing very well there. And John Jay had a good stretch there. But, you know, there wasn't any other prototypical leadoff guy that you could see. So, I mean, I don't think it's far-fetched that Escobar would hit leadoff, especially if he ever got hot doing so. He never hit. He hasn't hit all year, really, with the exception of maybe a week here or there. So he hasn't even really been in the opportunity to, like, even come close to hitting leadoff. You know, he's mostly been 7th, 8th, 9th, which is about where he should be. But, you know, the whole idea of Yosted is that, well, don't know why, but I'm going to put him up to the top.
But it happens.
But yeah, I don't expect. I don't know what's going to happen to him the rest of the year. Because I mean, Adalberto Mondesi is definitely earning the playing time at short, and I don't think he's going to play every day at short. But I think they're going to be splitting time a lot more the rest of the way, and that there might even be if any team wants like a veteran defensive replacement, Escobar could be easily had in a trade. I wouldn't expect the Royals to get anything really great at all for him, but they don't really have much reason to hold on to him. Mondesi's kind of starting to do what they wanted him to do. And, you know, that really leaves Escobar just kind of out. You know, his best years are behind him, and Mondesi's are still ahead of him. So they have no real reason to play Escobar more than, you know, they really need to, other than as like a tribute, a tip of the cap to his years of service, or to showcase him for somebody who might want to like throw a 27-year-old A-ball pitcher at the Royals to get him or something. So
I'll take it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, maybe, deal. Maybe this guy figures out a slider and we can push him, you know, quickly through the system and get a bullpen guy for a couple of years, that type of thing. That's really, you know, all the return they can hope for is someone that they might accidentally get like 3 months of relief pitching of in 2019, maybe. So,
yes.
So, yeah, I don't know how he set 125 as the number. That seems ridiculously high, even just, you know, at the peak. But
even assuming Yosted, I think that was just my embittered attitude towards the whole thing.
If you're going to go, go
that
for it.
Sprung for that one.
I don't know.
So, yeah, that's that one. So, you want to take the next one here?
Sure. This one, pretty straightforward. We were talking about Alex Gordon, who, you know, obviously 2016 to 2017 did not go very well. The projection, I believe, was I believe we took this from a projection. Was a batting average of .239 or higher. And, currently he's hitting .242. He's looked a lot better at the plate. At the time, though, we were both still pretty pessimistic. We both said that he would finish under that .239, which is kind of in the range of where he was 2 years ago. I think it was .241 in 2016, or maybe it was lower than that. But we both felt that he would be under. As of right now, we're both wrong because he's just barely over it. So the question is just now, well, okay, does he stay in that .240 range? Does he improve? Does he finish? Or does he start to fall down again and end up falling under that .239? So I actually have some numbers on this. I want to know what you think first, though, Jeff. Do you think he's going to finish over or under .239 by once we get to the end of the season? Not from this point on, but final average on the last day of the year, .239,
man,
higher or lower?
That's tough because it shows you how much we've changed our expectations of Gordon to say that you know, he's been kind of a pleasant surprise this year.
Right.
To hit 242.
Yeah.
Right. Which, you know, 5 years ago would have been just an awful season for him. But here we are. And so 242, okay, we'll take that, considering what he's given the last couple of years. But, this and the next one are the two definitely the most intriguing of the over-unders and how they're going to finish for the season. I am eternally cynical, probably, and so I'm sure you can guess where I'm going with this. But, Alex, the last 2 years of Alex Gordon have just, unfortunately, as hard as it is for me to say, completely robbed me of my faith in him.
Fair.
As a player to keep this going. So he has been a pleasant surprise to this point, but I just don't think he's going to get that 239 mark when it's all said and done. Now, that said, you know, last couple of years it's been closer to the 200 mark, so I could see him getting like a 235. I could see that being a little bit more realistic, but I just don't think that he's going to be able to maintain and or do better than what he has. And I think he'll probably hit another slump the rest of the way, especially as we get down to that grind and the Royals of those win total or loss totals are ticking up even higher. And it's going to be tough, even though Gordon's not the type of guy to kind of give up or more or less, you know, sometimes it's just human nature. It's just tough to stay engaged when you're that far gone. Yeah. So I don't think he's going to do it, but I'm happy to see that he's at least gotten a little bit of it back, and he's, you know, had a better first half of the season than we probably expected.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't looked the same kind of lost at the plate that he had in the last couple of years. You know, still not good, but I mean, some of the power has kind of halfway returned in some ways, or at least he's hit a couple homers, whereas last year I think he went through like 6 weeks without hitting a homer, and really, you know, he hit like what, 6 homers all year or something like that. So
yeah,
you know, that really disappointed. Like, it's not even like, even when he was like rough as a rookie, his first, you know, 3 partial years in the big leagues, it was like he could still at least put one out of the park every now and then. You know, he might strike out a bunch and make a lot of outs in the process, but he was putting some, you know, some souvenirs out there. And the last couple of years, that power is just sapped. It's just kind of disappeared, especially with a couple of seasons with like the juiced ball and everything. It's like, oh, dang, what's going on? But I think I'm going to go with over. I'm feeling optimistic. I took a look at just a couple of things, and these are things that could easily go south. So maybe I'm going to be very wrong in the end, and you'll be right. But in the first half of the year, Alex Gordon had a batting average on balls in play of .299. His career norm has been .312. So he's a little bit under what he normally has been in that category throughout his career. And in things like that, I tend to lean towards the bigger sample, which is his whole career. So I think, you know, if there's a way that he can maybe, you know, get that batting average on balls in play higher in the second half, that should be reflected in his batting average by the end of the year. So I actually expect him to hit a little better in the second half, I think, than in the first half, which would put him over. But just, you know, BABIP alone to me doesn't really ever tell the whole picture. I always like to figure the components of that BABIP and why it's where it is. And, you know, one thing this year is that Alex Gordon's hitting the ball on the ground a lot more compared to his career rates. Over the course of his career, he's about 40% hitting the ball on the ground. This year, he's not quite Hosmerian, but he's at 52.7% hitting the ball on the ground, according to Fangraphs, which is that's a jump. But even in other years, when he's been bad, he's still been in the 40s on his ground ball rate. So this looks to me like a bit of an anomaly. It can also maybe be connected to pitch selection, the type of contact that he's making. So, you know, it's not just like you can't say, well, the BABIP should veer up towards his career norm. There's no guarantee that the ground ball percentage is going to, you know, go down to that 40. It might stay exactly where it is. It might get worse. But I do think that if, you know, generally taken on its own, I would think that the ground ball rate will probably be lower, which means that those balls in play will be more line drives or more fly balls, and those tend to be hits more often. So I think that helps him out. And another thing that I think he would benefit from is that his this is, again, according to Fangraphs, the balls in play that are considered soft contact are happening at a lower frequency than over the course of his career, and the hard contact is a little higher than his career norm. So I think that, you know, you see someone who's maybe hitting the ball on the ground, but he's hitting the ball harder, and he's not hitting it as softly, which seems to, obviously, but, you know, there's soft contact, medium contact, hard contact. And so, like, he's hitting the ball harder, and it's going on the ground. So if he can, I think if that component, that ground ball rate goes back towards 40, I think the batting average, the BABIP, I think those things will go up. That being said, he's at 242. So with all of those things that have gone well, he's still at 242. So, like you said, there could be a slump. And I think one slump or one hot streak probably answers this. Like, he's got like a two-week stretch somewhere that's going to seal the fate of this over-under call. I think something's going to correct statistically. I think he's got a shot to be a little better in the second half. Not like he's going to hit 300. I mean, he's not going to be 2011 Alex Gordon, but I think he can still be productive and, you know, give us something to kind of lean on. You know, if Alex Gordon has a good second half, you know, the Royals are going to lose 100 games, but they're going to feel maybe a little bit better because he does have one more year on his contract. So I want to go over at this time, and I want to hope, I want to believe, I want to think that Alex Gordon still has a little bit left in him, and that, you know, his time hasn't completely run out.
That is completely fair, and bold, I might add. We haven't even reached the part where we review our bold predictions.
Yeah,
and
I gotta reset mine somehow because mine were way
start.
Off.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that in a second. But like I said, I'm eternally a cynic, but I do hope, as well as you do, I that he proves me wrong. This is one where I absolutely would love to be wrong on this.
Right, and I think we both said that when we picked under back in March. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think he'll get there, but I hope I'm wrong.
Yes.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
We will. Yeah. So finally – now we have our last over-under that we talked about. And this one, someone to name that we've mentioned a lot this year, Jacob Junis, talking about whether or not he would have 25 games started this year. You know, questions last year, was he good enough to stick around for an entire season in the starting rotation? Was he strong enough to be able to make it through the season? Did he have enough endurance? You know, would he stay from getting injured? And, you know, some of those questions seem to kind of have been answered, and some of them are still kind of lingering out there. So we set it at 25 for the over-under, you know, and of course, roughly 32, depending on where you are in the rotation, 32, 34, those are, you know, that's a full season without any injuries. Not many pitchers these days seem to do that, but that's what the number works out to be. So 25, you know, pretty solid most of the season. So as we sit here now with 67 games remaining, Jacob Junis has 17 starts, and he has been injured through the last kind of portion of the season leading up to the All-Star break here. And so, you know, we have received word that he will be back. So that's looking good. And, you know, assuming you were to be healthy, there's, you know, roughly 12, 13 starts remaining for all the starting rotation pitchers here. So it's certainly, you know, that would put him at, you know, 29, 30-ish starts for the season if he could make it. So I said under to start the season or before the season started. And I'm thinking he's probably going to go over on that because he's going to have roughly 12 opportunities. Mm-hmm. And even if that injury flares up again, you know, the chance that he would make it for 8 or 9 of those, I think those are pretty good chances there. So I'm actually going to change mine. I think I'm going to go with the over, even though I went with the under before the season. And, you know, similar to Soler before he got injured, Junis has been a very good, you know, not quite a surprise because we saw what he was capable of last year, but, you know, really great to see him have the success that he's had this season. And, you know, he's kind of tapered off a little bit from the very good start that he had, but all the same, you know, he's proven he belongs. He's proven he is a legitimate piece of the rotation. And, you know, hopefully he's even got, you know, it's possible you've seen him topped out, and if we have, that's okay. He's still he's shown that he can be someone who can be a valuable pitcher in this league. So, you know, I'm still okay with that, but hopefully, you know, there's even more to come from Jacob Junis. But I think I'm going to change and go with the over for the rest of the way. I think he gets 8 or more starts the rest of the way, rest of the season. And you had over to begin with, Mike. Are you still feeling confident on that one?
Yeah, but less so. I mean, one of the things that you mentioned, or a couple of things that you mentioned, was, you know, as you kind of alluded to bringing up this topic, was that, you know, maybe he hits some kind of a wall because he hasn't pitched in a full big league season before. You know, but then also, you know, the injury that he had was to his back, and those things sometimes can linger. They can cause problems. You know, if it is something where, even though he's coming back on Saturday, you know, that's, you know, numerically that gives him one more start. So, I mean, that definitely helps to stay over. And I think ultimately he will get over that 25, but I do think there is a bigger chance now than I did back in March that he would maybe fall under it. I'm not going to change my answer, but I wouldn't be terribly surprised if he comes out and over the next 2 or 3 starts, he still kind of has some struggles, isn't quite finishing the slider, which is a bit of an issue over the last, you know, handful of starts, 5 or 6 starts before he went on the disabled list. You know, if that's still an issue, they might even throw him in the minors for a week or two just to kind of work some things out, or maybe put him back on the DL to let him rest it back up. But I think ultimately there's enough opportunity for him to you know, get those starts in. And I think behind Duffy, he's one of the guys that they want to get a look at, and they want to have him pitch as much as he can. And so just that tendency, that preference is going to get them, you know, some kind of chance to get him at least 8 more starts. And I would say probably, you know, if he doesn't pitch poorly, he's got a good chance to finish with 29, 30 starts by the end of the year. So I'm going to stay over, but, you know, by the end of the year, I wouldn't be surprised if he finished under, but I'd be less surprised if he finishes over, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So I'm going to stay.
I think I follow.
I'm going to stay over, but I get it. Like, I'm not full hearted. I'm probably more confident in the over here than the Gordon, but not a lot, you know. It's, I'm not like, it's not like full weight is not behind this call. But I think it's a good chance. So I'm going to stay with the over.
All right. So that does it for the player over under that we had. Next, I guess we can talk about this. The Royals record.
Our record.
Under. We didn't really set an over under, but we both had our prediction.
Yeah.
Which we both predicted 72 and 90.
Oh, sweet summer child. What optimists we were back in.
What odd man just.
Didn't feel optimistic then.
No, I had to talk myself down from more of a 75, 76 type win total. And I arrived at 72. In order to get there, they would have to go 45 and 22, which, you know, a 45 and 22 stretch would be a playoff team a very good playoff game type stretch.
Yeah,
and
that's a 100-win pace or something.
Yeah, there's simply no way the Royals have any sort of, even if you still believe, as some do, that they've got a streak in them where they can win 8 out of 10 or something, there's simply no way this Royals team wins 45 games. So 72 is out of the question. Mathematically possible, sure. But
right, technically, yeah, okay,
yeah,
fine.
No, but it's not happening. They have to go 36-31, which is still a pretty good stretch, just to win or just to prevent themselves from losing 100 games. And I don't even think that's going to happen. They'd have to go, so let's see, there's 67 games left. So they'd have, if they went 15-52, the Royals, the Detroit Tigers' worst record in the history of baseball would be broken, because the Royals would have been worse.
Oh,
which is, you know, you think, oh, 15-52, no team is that bad, right? But they're 27-68 right now.
That's
so
not far off.
That's a 12-16 stretch is the difference. So, you know, I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but, you know, if the Royals get to 50 wins, I mean, they might have sub 50 wins this year. That's just, it's absurd to think about, but.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you look at that 45-22 to get to our 72 wins, you just flip that. Could they go 22-45? Yeah, they could.
Mm-hmm.
They could definitely do that.
Yeah.
Shoot, 22-45 would be a better pace than they've done so far this year.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yep.
Ugh.
So, to lose 117 games. So, or at least last I heard, I guess I haven't. I can't remember if that was before the final game before the All-Star break or after. Regardless, it's in there.
They're bad.
Yeah,
they're bad.
It's not anything good. And remember, the most losses ever is 119. So,
jeez,
it's in play for the Royals. And just, you know, Mike, you were the one that called this out in our Slack chat when we were talking about the possibilities of how bad the Royals record could end up being. And it would be so classically Royals that they would be worse than the Tigers and have the worst record in Major League history, only to have a team like the Orioles swoop in and have an even worse record in the same year and get the number one player or get the number one pick.
Well, that year, that 2002 show that we did when I was doing that research, the Royals lost 100 games for the first time ever. Three other teams lost 100 games that year.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of thing where it's like, okay, sure, yeah, the Royals, you know, they were very bad, but like so many other teams were also bad. And it's like, well, okay, you can't even get bad at the right time.
You can't you can't even be good at being bad.
Come on.
I remember the Chiefs in 2006, I remember the number one team, or the team that picked number one overall, had a 4-12 record. And the Chiefs, so that's, you know, the worst record in the league. And then the Chiefs in 2008 had a 2-14 record and picked third. Because it just so happened that was, hey, the year that the Detroit Lions decided they were not going to win a game. So, you know, it feels kind of like that, where, you know, right now the Royals are the worst team in baseball by record and by eyesight.
Yeah, just watch them.
but you know, it's very possible, especially now with the Orioles having traded away Machado, that things could get even worse for the Orioles.
And they're going to probably trade Zach Britton too. So I mean, they're going
to
be
race to the bottom,
just even worse by Adam Jones. I mean, they'll be completely unrecognizable in you know, 6 weeks.
Though at the same time, the Royals would be trading Mike Moustakas and possibly Whit Merrifield. So,
yeah. So,
for whatever that's worth,
just very bad, very bad team.
Yes. I mean, if anything, Salvador Perez should be much faster later in the season because he won't have to expend all that energy with the Gatorade dumps.
It's true. It's true. You don't know how much that takes off of a catcher. I mean,
it's right. You know,
that's why
everyone's talking about the knees and the you know, having to squat all the time, but no one talks about the stress of picking up a water cooler 95 times in a season and what that does to a man.
Right. We only have to do it 50. That's a lot better.
It's a little bit better, you know. It lasts a little bit longer. You feel a little bit fresher, a little more bounce in your step come August.
Yeah, they should take every opportunity to give him some rest in the second.
Yes, absolutely.
The rest of the way. Just because there's no reason. I mean, it's going to be tough to make him sit, but like, there's no reason to like put him through that.
Yeah,
kind
at least
of
make him DH
pain.
Or something. Don't put the yeah. wear on the knees. You
yeah,
know,
don't
put
make
him at first
him
base or something. Just say, hey, stand there for a while. You know, we'll keep your bat in there so you're fresh or you're not don't go cold there. But yeah. But anyway, it's enough about that.
Yeah.
Now we'll move and get an update on our bold predictions here. So we both had two bold predictions. So how do you want to do this? You just alternate?
Yeah, we can go ahead and do that. I think that's
okay.
Fair.
So we will do I'll take my first bold prediction, and then we'll move to yours. So my first one was looking a little bit better, and then now not so much. It was that Jorge Soler would have 25 home runs. It indeed was bold. He currently sits at 9, but again, he's been injured. So, you know, had he not gotten injured, you know, maybe he would have hit 3 or 4 more, and he'd be his pace would be a little bit closer to 25. As we stand now, it's highly unlikely that Jorge Soler gets to that 25 mark. As much as I hate to say, but you know, the 15 to 17, I think, is definitely in play. And so you think the 25, at least as a possibility for a full season, seems to be there. Especially if he were to get to that, you know, somewhere around that 17 mark to end the season, then you'd feel confident saying he's capable of hitting 25 in a season, because no one knew before, because his career high has been 12 before, even though the line on him as a prospect was always that prodigious power. So who knows? We'll see with that one. So that was my first bold prediction. It was indeed bold, and possibly too bold as of right now.
I don't think it was too bold. I think you're kind of right in the right realm, but you know, a guy gets hurt with a broken foot, and that's just going to turf any of those counting stats. Just like, well, if you'd have said like 450 slugging percentage, you'd probably be right. I don't know what his slugging percentage is, but it should be higher than 450, I think. He's at 466 slugging.
Yeah, I mean, he's got over 800 OPS.
That's definitely would have been in range, and that's not as impacted by an injury, at least, you know, statistically. So, but, you know, but 9 homers and 223 at-bats, you double that to even call it that 500, he's at 18. Yeah, I think you're not too far off. So I don't think that's, you know, ridiculously bold or anything like that. What is ridiculously bold is my first bold prediction back in March, which was that Miguel Almonte would end up with 10 saves for the Royals. He didn't even make the opening day roster.
No, he didn't.
Had a good spring training even, but there were shoulder issues and injury issues that have kind of bugged him here and there. Royals designated him for assignment. They ended up trading him to the Angels at the same time they picked up Abraham Almonte, who has also been designated for assignment now. So they have no Almontes. But
from,
Almonte has like
a plethora to none.
Right. Yeah. A monopoly to nothing. Just gone. Someone flipped the board. But yeah, Almonte has made it into one game for the Angels this year, and I think he gave up 2 runs in an inning. So he's not gonna get where I thought he would. I figured that the Royals would trade Kelvin Herrera, and in the second half, Almonte would take over as closer and would get an opportunity for those saves. And now Herrera is, you know, has been traded, but Willie Peralta is acting as the closer when the opportunity comes up every other week. And, you know, Almonte's barely, you know, seeing the big leagues. So way, way off on that one. That was pretty bad. I think last year or maybe the year before, I said I thought Dylan G would be a capable member of the pitching staff. And
I do recall that.
For a half, I was kind of there, and then he was very bad in the second half and was way off. So, and I said I had the Kyle Zimmer old maid card last year, I think.
Yeah.
It was off
on that, too. I passed that one on to you.
Just not getting these very good. Lorenzo Cain had that one good power year, and I nailed that.
Yes, you did.
Haven't done very well since.
No.
So, yeah.
I'm still smarting from my Jason Vargas ERA under 4,
yeah,
which he had until his last start of the season.
His last inning, really.
Yes.
You got ripped on that.
Oh, man. He was almost an all-star starter. I mean, I was sitting pretty.
Oh, yeah. It was we said guaranteed this time last year.
Nope. Yes, we did.
Nope.
Nope, nope, nope.
Didn't do it.
Yeah. So moving on, my final bold prediction was Kelvin Herrera would have 20 saves by the All-Star break by now and that he would be traded by the trade deadline. So I was pretty well on the right track there. He was, as we all know, Kelvin Herrera was traded, and he had 14 saves at the time. He was traded quite a bit ahead of the All-Star break, so didn't really get a chance to get those 20 saves. I don't even know if the Royals have won 6 games since he's been traded. I can't recall. I don't know that he would have
right
had a chance
to say no, I think.
Yes. But even still, he has not had a – he was traded to the Washington Nationals, who needed bullpen help. He has not had a save with the Nationals, so he's still sitting at 14, but it's been really I was on the right track, I think, on that one, and that was probably, mm-hmm. if I'm honest, looking back now, that probably wasn't that bold. I think it felt more bold at the time, just because we saw how much he struggled last year, and everyone was talking about how, oh, it's over for Herrera, mm-hmm. he can't be a closer, he's not that guy, etc., etc. So I think that's maybe why I felt like it was a little bit more bold at the time, but it really wasn't, because, you know, we all know what kind of a pitcher Herrera is, what he's been for his career. He showed it the first part of the season with the Royals, had a fantastic stint with the Royals in his last year, had a ERA of 105. He had 14 saves, and he was, I wonder almost how much leaving Kansas City had to do with how far his performance so far in Washington, because he was very emotional, said that he was, he understood why he was traded, but he loved his time in Kansas City, will always be a Royal at heart, et cetera, you know, sometimes those things are just kind of platitudes. You just say them, especially as a player, knowing, you know, just trying to keep a good name for himself, but it was definitely, especially if you saw Herrera when he gave the those quotes, you know, it was entirely genuine. So I do know that he had a love for the organization. I do wonder if maybe that had a little bit of an effect, you know, so because it's bad, it's hard enough going to a new team with new players in a new place, especially going from Kansas City to Washington D.C. I mean, that's such a huge difference. So who knows? Hopefully, he gets it back together and he can help the Nationals do well, if for no other reason than I hope to see him do well, because I like him. But so probably got caught up in the negativity a little bit there by saying that was bold, because it probably should have been downvoted for not being bold enough, because he probably would have been, if not at 20, pretty close had he stayed with the Royals. So
yeah, I think right now, let's see, the Royals have since Tim Hill has a save, Willie Peralta has a couple, Blaine Boyer ended up getting one. I'm pretty sure those happened after Herrera. I know Peralta's definitely did, so mm-hmm. maybe the opportunity would have been there in a couple of spots for him to get to 20. I mean, the Royals barely won 20 games, so in that sense, looking at the record, that looks pretty bold. I think there was still, you know, like we kind of talked about with the record, we were both still kind of like, maybe something takes off, that I think 20 saves would have been in range, you know, for a first half. 20 saves in, what, 95 games? You know? I mean, yeah. I mean, if the Royals say the Royals won half of those, a good chunk of those are, you know, he had 14 saves and 27 appearances for the Royals. It's been the same right range, you know. So I don't know. Maybe that is or is not bold, but you know, there was a question of, hey, can he regain it? Can he do this? Is there going to be an injury problem? He had so many different weird forearm injuries that just kind of sprang up last year where he just lost control. That could have been part of it too. So I don't know that it was a gimme. But I think that's definitely half credit, even three quarters credit on that one. Cause he did pretty much about what we thought he would be doing or what you were predicting there. And the trade definitely happened, much sooner than anyone thought. But, you know, I also think that if he'd have been on the team now, you'd have 2 weeks to get a couple more saves. You'd be in that same range. So, well, I guess that wouldn't be at the All-Star break, would it? Conditions. Yeah. So, not too bad on that one. Lot better than my Almonte closer.
I'll take it.
Yeah. I would say that's pretty close. And I guess I'll go ahead and finish up with my bold prediction, which at the time, and I specified OPS in this, I said back in March that I thought Lucas Duda would end the year with a higher OPS than Eric Hosmer. Which for a while, Duda, you know, homered in that first at bat and then didn't really do a whole lot for a while. And Hosmer was hitting pretty well, and it looked like, oh, crap, I really messed that up. And then over time, Hosmer's just been slumping hardcore out there. He's hitting the ball on the ground. You know, we've joked about it in the past, but he's like around like 60% hitting the ball on the ground. Just crazy. Like every single year he hits it on the ground more and more and more. Duda has, you know, he missed a good chunk of time with the plantar fasciitis. And so as a result, you know, his overall numbers, you know, doubles, home runs, hits, they don't look great. But when it boils down to it, Lucas Duda has a 694 OPS right now. Eric Hosmer has a 714 OPS. They're not that far off. You know, back in May, I felt like this is going to be a no-brainer loss. I think it's still potential that Duda could do it. You know, when he came back from that injury, he hit pretty well. He got a couple of doubles, a couple of homers, even got a triple in there. So if he's healthy for the next, you know, however many weeks he's still on the Royals, he may have a shot at doing that. That being said, we've definitely seen Hosmer have these really, really, really hot stretches and these really, really, really cold stretches basically his whole career. And kind of like Gordon, one streak probably picks this one. I could easily see him coming out second half and like the next 4 weeks, he just hits like 400 and crushes the ball and everything's all better. And if he does that, he's probably going to smoke Lucas Duda in OPS. Cause Duda just, I don't think he's going to have that kind of stretch. But if Hosmer continues to struggle and Duda just continues to kind of be the worker bee that he is, you know, he's got a shot. I think I'm going to end up losing this one, but I'm not conceding it just yet. I think there's a chance that maybe something happens. And it might even be like a 3 week stretch where Lucas Duda hits a bunch of homers before getting traded to, I don't know, some AL team that can stash him until September where he can pinch hit and be pinch ran for a lot and platoon against righty starting pitchers and righty relievers and whatnot. But they're a lot closer than I kind of thought they would be. And just as a side note to all of this, Eric Hosmer has a 714 OPS. Adalberto Mondesi has a 714 OPS. So, you know, there's that.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at, especially, you know, Lucas Duda making $3 million, what is he making? $3.5 million or something, right? Compared to Hosmer's massive contract that he got, 7 years, $144 million, I believe, were the numbers on that one. So when you say $20 million versus $3 million, and the gap in OPS is only 20 points. And it's not like, you know, it'd be less of an issue if it was like, oh, you know, 910 versus 890 OPS. Like, okay, you know, those are both really good.
Right.
But you're talking a 714 OPS for Hosmer, who's a first baseman in the National League. I mean, they've got to be disappointed. And from a lot of the tweets that I've seen from, I don't follow a ton of or any really Padres fans or media, but the ones that have been retweeted into my timeline that I've seen have been pretty negative. And there's a lot of
is this normal? We're like,
a lot of flashbacks.
He just does this. This is just a thing that he does. It's an even year. It's what he does.
If it happens, you know, you got to push through. You got 7 years of him. Don't burn yourself out on it yet. There's going to be plenty to come. But there's going to be great moments as well, just as there were for the Royals. But as of right now, your bold prediction, I would stick with it too. I think, you know, I think you're right, due to without any injuries. And, you know, you're probably correct in your assessment of Hosmer that he'll have about a 2-week stretch where he's just going to crush everything. And his OPS will end up being, you know, probably on the short side of 800, but a bit closer than he is now, if I had to guess. But as of right now, it was a very bold prediction, and it's looking like you're closer than I definitely would have thought at this point. So,
if I were to offer a revision, I'm not going to revise it, but according to Wins Above Replacement Player on Baseball Prospectus, Eric Hosmer is a negative 0.3 WARP player, and Lucas Duda is a negative 0.1 WARP player. So it's close, but Lucas Duda is slightly more valuable or less valuable.
Yeah, less not valuable.
Than Eric Hosmer by that measure. Which that's got to be on the I didn't look at it how it splits up. It's got to be on the defense, which Hosmer always gets ripped on that. But you know, one thing I would mention though, you know, one thing that people were kind of worried about was like, well, who's going to scoop it over there? Who's going to scoop it? I've noticed really no difference at first base all year.
No.
Like it's whatever, they throw the ball, guys make the play. Hunter Dozier's had some adventurous moments, but he's played like 4 innings of first base entering the year.
Yeah.
So, sure, it's going to happen. Mike Moustakas has looked a little awkward over there, but he's been able to do it. Ultimately, doesn't really matter. You know what? Lucas Duda has made all the throws. I haven't seen him throw it past anybody. So that's good because that would definitely be noticed and commented on if he made a wild throw past somebody. So, you know, don't really miss Eric Hosmer. You know,
no. Especially not on a 27-68 team.
Sure, yeah. How much better would they be with them? Pfft, maybe they got 30 wins.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yay.
Good. Good for them.
So, well, all right. That does it. That'll wrap up the show for us.
See y'all in October.
We covered a lot. Yeah. Right. If only. But no, we'll be back next week because we love torturing ourselves and talking about Royals baseball when they're 27. It's going to cross the line at some point to where it then becomes fun to talk about how bad they are. That's that's kind of the way of it, right? So since we've done this podcast for long enough, we've seen the ebbs and flows. So it's, you know, it sucks because we have high hopes, you know, they're 2012, 2013-ish seasons, and then they get really bad and are disappointed, and then it crosses over. Like in 2012 is probably the best example, you know, our time, and then they start off 3-14, and very similar to how they started off this year, actually. And then
just getting hammered.
Yeah, and then they kept being bad, and then it kind of crossed over, and it was fun to just kind of, you know, joke around and talk about whatever, and then that was that. So at some point it's going to cross over, and at some point soon, I think.
Maybe, yeah.
I hope. I just hope, you know, if Soler comes back and Mondesi keeps chugging along and Bonifacio's back now, if he can maybe at least they'll have a little bit more flair to him, a little bit more interesting things to watch, you know, if they lose. If you're going to be bad, at least be interesting, right?
Right, yeah.
So hopefully.
And I think they've got guys like that. Soler, Bonifacio, Mondesi, Rosell Herrera. The rest of Whit Merrifield's year, I think that's pretty interesting. I think there's some potential there for some guys to kind of emerge and be fun to watch. And, you know, the pitching is going to be kind of rough to see, but, you know, it's how it goes sometimes, you know. So, I don't know. I'm sure we'll get to that zen-like point of realizing that life is suffering and we just go on, but you know, it is still kind of sad to watch a game and be like, there's a 10% chance my team's gonna win this. Haven't really settled on the amusement yet, but we'll get there, especially once they start trading guys. Then it's like, well, all bets are off.
Yes, so I don't know. I think they'll be a little bit more interesting in the back portion of the season than they were in the first 95 games. Maybe that's wishful thinking on my part, but hopefully I am. We'll be here to talk about it one way or the other, starting with next week when we will be back. So be sure to come back next week. Until then, of course, as always, please visit our sponsors, Kelly's Westport Inn. You know, you get a nice night like tonight. You know, the weather is it's a little bit more bearable to be outside. Would be nice to have a cold brew, something, you know, go chill at Westport. They got and Kelly's in Westport. They got a nice rooftop deck, sit out there, enjoy one of the non blistering evenings that we have. And, it's, you know, obviously when you're listening to this, you won't be able to, it'll probably be much hotter than it was. But if we get any more nights like tonight, then be sure to take advantage going there. And if it's too hot, you can beat the heat with bpkansascity.com. Of course, we have tons of content that we're putting out there. As always, Clint talking great about the minors, discussing a lot of the new Royals that are in. We've got mid-season rankings coming out for prospects, for farm systems, etc. All kinds of stuff going on. As well as just talking about the team and the possibly historic run that they're currently on. So be sure to visit BP Kansas City as well. So that'll be it for us. We'll see you next week. So please be sure and come back and see us then. Until then, see you next time. As always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.